Welcome to Beyond the Show, the podcast home of all things Cannabis Conference. My name is Eric Sandy, and I'm the digital editor of the Cannabis Group at GIE Media. Over at CannabisBusinessTimes.com, we've been publishing a number of features lately about price compression in the U.S. cannabis market. While each state market may have its own supply chain nuances, this broader economic issue seems fairly universal as cannabis, still federally illegal, mind you, comes into its own. Check out our reporting, and as always, please feel free to drop us a line with story tips or thoughts on how we might best approach a topic like this. To further home in on the price compression story, I spoke with Rick Maturo, BDSA's Director of Insights and Analytics, who was able to share some helpful data points that might illuminate how we can think about these ongoing trends. Supply is up in most states, but demand is too. And inflation is ravaging the consumer economy outside of cannabis. So what gives? The industry finds itself in a unique position in 2023, and all signs point to a slow-moving market correction as this year unfolds. As Meg Sanders, CEO of Canna Provisions in Massachusetts, recently told me, it's time to reconsider your business strategy. Don't rely on what worked in previous years. Rethink the way you do business. It's not all doom and gloom, but it's not the cheeriest moment in cannabis either. That said, please enjoy my conversation with Rick Maturo. Hello, Rick, and thanks so much for joining the show this week. It's great to get a chance to talk with you about some of these very timely and pertinent economic issues across the cannabis industry, one phrase being price compression. And I feel like, just speaking for myself, it's hard to turn around anymore without running into some story about price compression or some bit of data that exemplifies this price compression. So I wanted to begin our conversation today with, well, I suppose that phrase, price compression. Is this a fairly universal theme that we're seeing across the U.S. markets, as fragmented as they are in other ways, or are some states seeing more of this downward pressure than others?
Hey, Eric. Yeah, thank you so much for having me on here. So just to address your question, we're definitely seeing it, you know, pretty universally across the board, with all states, you know, having seen the average retail price of a cannabis product, you know, decline if we're looking at the fourth quarter from 2022 and comparing that to the same quarter a year ago. Certainly, you know, there's different magnitudes within markets. You know, some are certainly seeing a little bit more of that price compression thing, and then some are seeing a little bit less. But yeah, in general, what's definitely a universal factor. I would say probably the biggest differentiator, you know, that we're seeing is kind of what that market landscape looks like in terms of the number of brands, number of products within certain categories that are playing there. And I would say, just as a general rule of thumb, you know, one of the things that we've seen is that those markets that are much less concentrated, you know, have a lot of different players, you know, in the market relative. Those are the markets that tend to be hit a little bit harder with price compression, just because, you know, there's more independent entities, you know, kind of competing against each other, trying to all win out on price. And certainly, you know, consumers have more choices available in those markets. So just as a general rule, that's kind of what we're seeing. There's more fragmented markets tend to be hit a little bit harder with price compression overall than some of those more concentrated markets.
Certainly. Yeah. I wanted to ask a bit about that split sort of, you know, on one hand you have what we've come to know as the legacy markets, which in general are some of the Western U.S. states that have had some sort of legal adult use market in place for a number of years. And then you have some newcomers, most of which are in the Midwest, Mid-Atlantic, you know, New England. And I'm curious, since operators across the U.S. are kind of confronting this economic situation, is this a case where you see some of the newer market entrants, whether that be like a New Jersey or Missouri, I know some of these are very new adult use markets, where they have to sort of grow up fast and almost mature at a more rapid clip than say Oregon, 5 years ago?
Yeah, in general, you know, we are seeing some of these newer markets that have come online maturing at a faster rate than what we've seen from some of those legacy markets. You know, we'll say that when we speak specifically about New Jersey, we did actually see that average retail price, you know, kind of bucked the trend there. And we actually saw an increase, you know, from the second quarter of 2022 through the fourth quarter of 2022 in terms of that average retail price. Missouri, excuse me, you know, we did see that price compression hit pretty strong, you know, throughout the year of 2022. So even though that's a newer adult use market, and I'm speaking specifically about Missouri before it launched adult use here, but we did see that price compression hitting, you know, all four quarters for the 2022 there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was hoping to maybe ask you a bit about, maybe to push that point a little bit, to ask you about demand. I know, and I'm certainly no economics major or anything, but I know that price tends to derive from both supply and demand curves. And my understanding is that it's not like demand is decreasing. In fact, it may be increasing as a lot of these markets come online. So could you sort of maybe elaborate on what a lot of these markets are seeing on the demand side for cannabis?
Yeah, absolutely. So again, kind of just looking at those the most recent quarter that we just completed there, the fourth quarter of 2022, and comparing it to that same quarter in 2021, what I can kind of see here is that across the 14 markets that BDSA tracks, you know, most of them did see increased demand. A couple of outliers there that did not see that increase in demand when we compare those two periods, despite seeing pretty strong price compression, would be California and Colorado, and then Oregon. So again, Eric, you know, speaking to kind of the differences that we see between some of those more established legacy markets and, you know, some of the newer ones, certainly all three of those, California, Colorado, and Oregon, you know, not seeing that ensuing increase in demand of units being sold despite those lower prices. You know, I think kind of proves out that there's definitely a difference there when we talk about the maturity with markets.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I want to ask about I guess there are a number of different dichotomies here, you know, legacy markets, new markets, another one, of course, being adult use versus medical. And maybe Missouri is a good example, maybe it's not. But I was wondering if you could maybe talk a bit about that, the differences between medical and adult use. Are medical markets insulated in any way from some of these pricing pressures?
Not necessarily. Certainly, if I look at, you know, some of the medical markets that BDSA tracks here, you know, Missouri, you know, looking at 2022, you know, we did see that price change from fourth quarter of 2022 versus the fourth quarter of 2021. Missouri was actually, you know, one of the markets that saw the highest decrease in the average price, you know, across all those cannabis products. So you're down about $6.75, you know, if you're looking at just the average retail price of, you know, a cannabis product in the Missouri market. Same kind of story that we're seeing with Missouri happening in Pennsylvania. You know, you're down about $6 if you're comparing that average retail price for a cannabis product from the fourth quarter of 2022 versus the fourth quarter of 2021. And kind of to just pile on there, Florida, another medical market that BDSA tracks, not far behind, you know, down about $5.60, you know, comparing kind of those two fourth quarter periods that I mentioned before. So definitely, you know, those medical markets, you know, are not insulated. You know, on the contrary, you know, they're seeing some more price compression than, you know, what we would expect, or excuse me, than what we've seen in some of the adult use markets.
Yeah, it's very interesting. You know, I know what we've been talking about so far is a bit of historical data, certainly some very recent historical data, but nonetheless, we're kind of looking back at the past year or so. But I know a lot of what BDSA does and a lot of what just the cannabis market is super interested in is are market growth projections. And in general, I know that, speaking generally, the projections for the cannabis market are kind of just an upward curve. There's a lot of growth to be had. These are still very, very early days for the cannabis market. But, you know, the status quo right now could certainly lead to some anxiety on the part of either existing operators or people who may be interested in getting into the market. So I just wanted to get a sense from you, generally speaking, about how projections for the next 1 to 5 years might be changing, you know, meaning is this price compression a blip that we're going to need to navigate, or could this be a bit more of a market correction that could affect those several years worth of market outlooks.
Yeah, Eric, definitely can understand, you know, why, you know, anyone with an eye on the cannabis industry would want to be cognizant of, you know, what BDSA is thinking the market's going to do going forward. I guess I can just say that, you know, we're definitely expecting that this price compression that we saw, you know, certainly in 2022 and even before that, you know, is likely to continue at least into 2023. We're not really predicting that those prices are going to return to those past COVID era highs in 2023. The only thing that can buck that trend is if we see some very significant mitigating factors that, you know, frankly are just not very likely to happen. I'm talking, you know, fall off of 80% of the supply that's available there, so there's just very little supply going on, or, you know, maybe one brand kind of just going in and buying out any and all of its competitors. So again, not very likely to happen. What I can say though, in terms of growth for the future, you're absolutely right. You know, it's certainly an upward trajectory. We're still very excited about what the future holds for the U.S. market in particular. But gotta say, you know, those strong growth numbers for some of those legacy markets, you know, that we were seeing in previous years, you know, those are certainly going to slow. Most of the growth that you're going to see at least through 2027 is primarily going to be coming from some of those newer markets that are coming online, specifically those markets in the Northeast. And then some of those other large medical markets converting to adult use, or rather that BDSA is predicting to come turn to adult use. And when I talk about markets in the Northeast, specifically, I'm really talking about kind of, I want to say the elephant in the room, but, you know, New York. Obviously, there's been some soft starts and, you know, a little bit of challenges, I think, getting that market online. You know, certainly, I think people were predicting that maybe we'd be a little bit further down the road than what we're seeing today. I think I saw they just had opened the third dispensary in New York City. Mm-hmm. But definitely, looking to New York and New Jersey, you know, it'd be strong factors for growth in the Northeast. And then certainly, you know, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention, you know, some of those large medical markets that BDSA also tracks as well. So certainly, you know, we're predicting that Florida by 2027, you know, they'll have an open and operational adult use market. Pennsylvania, you know, will certainly join the fold probably earlier than Florida, perhaps. Well, so, you know, those two markets coming online, you know, will also add, you know, pretty strong growth to top line numbers. But, you know, if you're, you know, someone, you know, who's expecting a ton of growth in some of those legacy markets, and you may want to just temper, you know, some of those expectations, especially if I just kind of look at those compound annual growth rates, specifically if I just been looking at kind of a cohort of some of those most mature markets, you know, that we've covered in the past year. I'm thinking about states like California, Colorado, Nevada, Oregon, obviously, you know, very strong markets traditionally, but we're really seeing those compound annual growth numbers really being in kind of those low to mid single digits there, versus I think about what those same CAGRs would be through 2026 with some of those newer and emerging markets that we just mentioned. You know, Pennsylvania, we're predicting it's going to be double digit growth. New Jersey, same thing, you know, double digit growth probably in the mid to low 30s in terms of that CAGR. Missouri, you know, a market that, you know, we were talking about a little bit earlier, also going to be a strong growth market there, you know, about 35% or so in terms of that CAGR through 2026. And then even Florida, you know, could reach a 20% CAGR or so, you know, through 2026. So definitely, you know, I think if you're looking for where that growth's going to come from, just to reiterate, you know, definitely look at some of those new and emerging markets and, you know, don't expect to see as strong of growth in some of the more established legacy markets.
Yeah, I think, I mean, that's a really interesting trend that's starting to reveal itself here in the U.S. And I know a lot of what we're talking about here, for obvious reasons, pertains to data and trends that we can plot on, you know, over time. But I'm curious, you know, for so long in cannabis, it seems like California has been something of a leader in the market, or even a tastemaker. You have a lot of brands that are almost incubating in California, and then they eventually reach other markets either through acquisitions or MSO growth from California and beyond. But I'm curious if we're going to see more rapid growth in some of these newer markets, if we might expect some more homegrown brands to become either competitive with California-based brands or to take on a character of their own and maybe not lean so heavily on California in the cannabis market. If that question makes sense, I guess I kind of see, especially with New York, not that California is going to be dethroned as this this massive market in the U.S. anytime soon, but I'm curious if we're going to start seeing some significant brands emerging from some of these newer markets.
Yeah, Eric, I think it's definitely a mixed bag. I mean, certainly, you know, in some of these newer markets, there is definitely an appetite to bring successful brands from other markets into some of those newer and emerging markets. You know, there's definitely an appetite for that. And in fact, you know, you're already starting to see some of those brands popping up in some of these earlier markets. But you know, definitely, I think there's certainly an appetite, you know, to get some of those homegrown brands, you know, growing and seeing some of that same success as well. Hard to say if, you know, some of the homegrown ones will be able to match some of the success of the brands that we've seen in California and other legacy markets, but definitely I think there's something to be said about, you know, some of those smaller, you know, more independent brands or even brands that are owned by some of those larger brand houses in some of those newer markets, you know, what they can do. Certainly here, you know, I think people's eyes are still on California and what's all going on there in terms of new products being put into market and new product SKUs being tested in that market. But, you know, I think you probably will eventually start to see some of that attention shift again to some of those Northeast markets, you know, even some of the larger Midwestern markets, I think, are looking to make their own stake in terms of brands. So kind of a mixed bag there.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, I wanted to turn, or maybe zoom in rather, on the retail segment in particular. And one thing I've noticed in adult use and medical markets alike is that you see a lot of these weekly deals or various promotions that go on. And certainly there are all the obvious cannabis industry holidays, but even throughout a typical week, you see a lot of retailers lowering prices on certain products. Given all the price compression we've been talking about, could you maybe elaborate on whether or not that common retail strategy is super effective at this point, or if retailers might want to rethink how they market their products?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, those discounts and those promotions, you know, by and large, definitely do catch consumers' attentions. You know, certainly I'd be misspeaking if I said that I certainly was not also keeping an eye on those, you know, for my own personal self as well as just from the industry standpoint. But gotta say, I think retailers and brands, and certainly, you know, folks are getting more adept at this, but I think they really need to understand kind of the numbers and what's going on behind some of those discounts and promotions, because one of the things that we've seen is there's an appetite to want to, you know, really kind of reach that lowest price possible for folks. And again, that can certainly increase units in some cases, but, you know, some of the cases that we looked at here at BDSA is that in some cases, retailers may be discounting a little bit too much to the point that they don't need to go that low to still see that increased demand that we spoke to a little bit earlier in the conversation. So for anyone, you know, tuning in, listening in, I would definitely want you to think about kind of what those numbers are and, you know, really start to understand if you need to discount as far as you're going to see that same level of demand. And certainly that's the type of work that, you know, we're helping clients out with on a daily basis here. But in general, you know, I think you don't always need to go as low as maybe some are thinking. And I think sometimes it's trying to beat your neighbor out, and ultimately it's kind of a lose-lose for everyone because that price doesn't need to be as low to still see that increased demand in some cases.
Yeah, certainly. I know, of course, you know, we've been talking mainly on about the business side of this equation, but for consumers and patients, you know, this pricing trend may be an exciting thing for all the obvious reasons. Price being one of the major factors that goes into a buying decision, along with you know, the perennial THC percentage driving all sorts of flower purchases, but of course, pricing can't be the only thing, and may not even be the most important thing for a lot of consumers. Are there other factors, whether that's product categories or even brands, that that you might suggest retailers try to highlight when they're talking with consumers to maybe get them not thinking about price so much as, you know, consumption method or brand, things like that?
Yeah, absolutely. So definitely spot on there, Eric. You know, some of the top drivers that consumers are looking at are certainly, you know, that high THC content, that taste and flavor profile, and then certainly price. And we don't really see much differentiation whether someone's a new consumer or, you know, they've been in the category for a really long time. You know, one of the things that I think brands also need to realize is that, you know, we are seeing a lot of brand loyalty going on. I think that that really traces down to, you know, the value that some of these brands are able to put out, you know, with their sourcing of products. So I would say if you're really looking to drive business to a specific brand or to your specific brand, I would think very strongly about what the value proposition is for each of the products in your assortment. You know, you go category by category or brand by brand, and really start to understand how the value proposition that each product is in the market there can provide for consumers. So, you know, if you've done a bang up job of really selecting some strong strains and cultivars that you know are really going to help people out with certain needs that they may have, definitely, I think highlighting some of that can be important. Same thing with minor cannabinoids and terpene profiles. You know, we've seen a pretty strong shift where we're seeing a lot of, you know, some of the leading brands as well as even some of the smaller brands really starting to highlight, you know, some of those differences that they put into the market in terms of their formulation, their extraction method, or even flavor and terpene profiles that the products have. So, you know, any of those value propositions or attributes, rather, that these products have, I think they're definitely worth highlighting. And at the same end, it's also important to do that because I think that sometimes consumers, you know, have a lot of choice, and if those differences aren't clearly articulated to them, you know, they may think that your product is very similar to a competitor's product, when in actuality, your product is very differentiated. So really kind of leaning in on what those different attributes are, what the value each product can bring, I think can definitely help consumers to understand why a certain product might be a better fit for them than not. And still, even things like packaging, you know, can signal, you know, value to consumers as well. So definitely thinking about things like that, you know, social equity and, you know, pro-social behaviors on behalf of brands, you know, can go a long way. People want to feel good about the products that they're consuming and feel like the brands that they're supporting are also putting good out into the industry and the world at large. So, you know, don't discount those little things that brands are doing there.
Yeah, absolutely. It's certainly much more holistic than simply, you know, the economics of pricing here. And so I wanted to maybe wrap with this question. You know, we're talking a lot about pricing trends, and certainly cannabis operators of all stripes are going to be watching closely in their own market and beyond their own market. But are there other trends that you might point operators to have them keep an eye on some segment of the industry over the next 12 months that might provide some important lessons that maybe they're not paying super close attention to right now and should shift their attention there over the next year or so?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, SKU and assortment optimization is always going to be important to retailers, but I think in this very competitive environment, you know, it's definitely something that I think needs to be paid even closer attention to, excuse me. And, you know, there are a couple of product categories that, you know, we've certainly, you know, kept an eye on and seen some pretty tremendous growth with, as well as some different attributes of products as well. So, you know, just thinking very high level here, that infused pre-roll category, you know, has certainly, you know, grown a lot. What we're seeing today is about a little more than a third of all pre-roll sales now across all the markets in aggregate, you know, are coming from that infused pre-roll segment. So definitely, I think that's something to kind of keep an eye on. You know, in terms of other attributes that I think retailers and brands may want to pay attention to and, you know, learn to highlight for their consumers. Spoke to it a little bit earlier, but, you know, any of those minor cannabinoids going into the product formulation, I think will be very important, especially for directing consumers toward what needs these products might be good for. Another thing too, and this is sort of specific to the edible category in this respect, but solventless infusions. You know, we've seen some pretty strong growth in that solventless category, you know, especially in you know, the leading edible category like gummies and stuff. So that could also be something to keep in mind. Just in general, I think tiering. Certainly, I think there's a growing number of consumers that are looking for very premium products that, you know, have some very specific attributes to them. Think about things like live rosin cartridges, for example. But that doesn't mean that, you know, you got to forget about kind of your value to your customer, or your customer that's really looking for, you know, that weight and that volume, you know, when they go in. So, you know, having something for everyone, I think, is going to be very important in being able to address those different wants and needs of the various consumers, regardless of what tier they're in, or, you know, what their level of maturity with the category is. I think it's certainly, you know, something that I would hone in on for retailers.
Yeah, those are all great points. And bringing up solventless, you know, it sort of rings close to home because it's been such an interesting subcategory to watch over the last year or so. And it's a great example because your average consumer is not just going to automatically suddenly ask for solventless products. It takes a certain amount of consumer education to even, you know, be aware of what that means. And I know consumer education is something that comes up all the time when we're talking about retailers and what staffs can do when they're engaging with customers. But just a good reminder that as we're talking about pricing, that consumer education element is a huge part of that. Price is obviously super important, but cracking open some of that demand for something like a solventless edible line, it takes a little bit of work to get to that point, and it's exciting when it does happen.
Yeah, absolutely, and you know, certainly we're seeing a lot of education happening at various touch points throughout the industry, but you know, I still think the same point stands true today that it did years ago, that you know, the best education piece and probably the first line of defense for brands and retailers alike is, you know, making sure that they're being led by kind of those frontline workers there, you know, your salespeople that are at the counter engaging with consumers on a daily basis, because certainly, you know, whether you're a new consumer or you're an advanced consumer, you know, having questions being able to be answered by those salespeople at the point of sale, I think is, you know, invaluable. Not to say that people aren't trying to do their research, and, you know, certainly we're seeing a growing number of consumers, you know, doing research before they even get into the store, but at the same time, you know, those sales folks, you know, can certainly drive decisions and ultimately, I think, help consumers make a more informed and ultimately a better decision with their input.
Absolutely. Well, Rick, it was great getting a chance to talk to you about some of these fairly urgent issues, but also some of these more timeless issues too, affecting the cannabis industry. And it's great to get BDSA's perspective on this, both on the data side, but also on that more holistic industry overview side. So very glad we could connect and glad you could join the show this week.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Eric. Have a great rest of your day.
And that's a wrap on another episode of Beyond the Show. Hope you enjoyed that conversation with Rick Maturo from BDSA. You know, the whole price compression story really is fairly complicated. And as I said at the top of the episode, it kind of varies from state to state in terms of just how those price points are moving. The pricing pressure is pretty intense in a lot of these states, but it's also, you know, you have markets in different states of development. So it's important to really zoom in on different state markets, like we did here briefly with Rick and over on CannabisBusinessTimes.com with a number of the features that we're running, and certainly like we're going to do at Cannabis Conference 2023. You know, we are running the lowest rates of the season. If you're listening to this episode when it comes out, at least, we're going to be running those rates through March 15th. So make sure you check out CannabisConference.com to learn more about all the plans that are taking shape right now and all the announcements to come. Make sure you get signed up. Like I say, you know we're going to see you out in Vegas. Why don't you save some money along the way? Get yourself registered now. Get ready for Las Vegas. It's going to be a little hot out in August. Well aware of that. But we'll be nice and cool in the conference itself at the Paris. So check out CannabisConference.com. Sign up for the newsletter along the way. And I'll see you back here every Friday for Beyond the Show.